Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of June, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Here comes the blues.
What?
Or don't get the blues.
Don't.
Here comes the news.
There we are.
Oh, boy.
You got to start coming to rehearsal.
You new at this?
Yeah. This is what show now?
Who's the new guy?
Sabando Gigante. Okay. In scenes associated more with dictatorships than the U.S., politicians in the House of Representatives took to Twitter and Periscope on Wednesday to evade a TV blackout of a sit-in held to push forward new gun legislation. Trouble started when House Democrats, led by Representative John Lewis of Georgia, started their protest. It came just over a week after a gunman killed 49 people at a Florida nightclub, and 2 days after four gun control bills were voted down by Republicans in the Senate. Asked for order on the floor, the Democrats refused to budge, and so the House went into recess. The cameras in the House are controlled by the majority, in this case the Republicans, and the signals are provided to broadcasters for their use. C-SPAN, a channel owned by cable and satellite operators, typically carries the signal live, and when the House went into recess, the feed from the floor went black. That immediately sparked accusations of censorship. C-SPAN, of course, was quick to point out that it had no control over the feed. Frustrated that their protest was not being seen by the American public, the politicians began providing updates on Twitter. Some, including Brenda Lawrence of Michigan, posted images that were no longer being seen on television. Later, the TV networks picked up a Periscope feed that had been broadcast from the House floor, restoring its coverage. At least two politicians were broadcasting live on the platform and being watched by thousands of viewers. One senator thanked the, quote, younger members for providing this new technology.
Yes, this public service.
Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg, of course, was quick to point out that some people were live streaming over Facebook, too. Don't forget Facebook.
Please.
This kind of amused me because it's just one more way we see the new technologies
right.
taking over and providing things that we're... The older we are not ready to handle.
Well, yet. In the old days, you had, what, three TV stations?
Right.
And that was it. And if you wanted to change the channel, you got up off the sofa, you walked over to the TV, and you turned the knob.
And if you wanted to know what was going on in Congress, you waited till the next day.
That's right.
Or it might be in the paper.
Right. Or you'd listen to Walter Cronkite.
Right.
And everything was kind of centralized. And what we're seeing now is that things are becoming so decentralized that if you want to be a group of people who have power over a large group of other people, they have the ability to do an end run around you. They have the ability to what they call disintermediate you and make sure that you're not in the middle.
Nice word.
Yeah, it's a good one. Use that in Scrabble. So the thing that struck me about this news article is that the cameras in the House are controlled by the Republican majority. That's surprising to me.
The cameras are controlled by the majority. In this case, it's the Republicans.
Well, yes. But
right.
Why? Can't there be an impartial third party that just documents
happening? Well, you would certainly think that was a possibility, but it is not, apparently, at this point in time.
That's interesting.
That's the way it works. The cameras are controlled by the majority.
So I'm sure next that the controlling party will just put in cell phone jammers and restrict the Wi-Fi and just make sure that whatever is getting out from this democratically elected group of people is whatever the controlling party wants.
Right, exactly. What amused me most about this was the realization that there's a whole group of those people in Congress. This shouldn't amuse me. This should frighten the hell out of me.
Disgust you, yes.
Who had no idea that this technology even existed. They were apparently quite shocked that there was a way to broadcast video that didn't involve giant cameras with three lenses on
the front. Right, and a giant red light to let you know when it's on.
Right. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Dems move to Periscope after C-SPAN feed cut. And your choices are Can't Stop the Signal, Mal, Good Guy with a Camera, Feed Should Have Stayed Cut, Para What Now, and Congra What Now? So far, we've got 25 votes. Feed Should Have Stayed Cut and Para What Now are tied for number one. I know you're going to have more to say about this. God knows you're going to have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right-hand side under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. And under the forums, the second forum is the poll discussion. And right now, at least, the first choice there is 25 June 16. Dems move to Periscope after C-SPAN feed cut. So far, we've got three people and four posts.
Nice.
In there. Now, please, let me just ask that I understand that this is a political issue for some people, as opposed to the technical issue I think of it as, which means that people are going to be hepped up and really turn off their brains and just say whatever stupid thing on both sides of the aisle that they've been told to say. So keep it clean
keep
and
it civil.
Keep it civil and keep it calm. Let's try to have a technical discussion as opposed to Democrats are thieves and Republicans are idiots, or maybe it's the other way around. I forget. And we'll just go from there. Can we do that?
Does it really make any difference?
Right, exactly right. And if you'd like to talk about this live, please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0400.
I see it more as, you had the establishment for a while, and then you had the baby boom that came along, and it was a giant group of Americans that may not necessarily agree with what the previous generation was putting forth.
Right.
And on a number of subjects, which I'm not going to get into details, but people know what I'm talking about. So I think we're kind of seeing a similar thing with people who are, for lack of a better term, those digital natives, people that have always been swimming in technology, that it's not just a newfangled destination that you might choose. It's just where you happen to be. It's like breathing, to have technology near you, to be able to communicate with pretty much whoever you want at any time you want, and to hear back from them. And also, to be able to communicate from one person to many people, that's a new idea. So
right.
It's not just going down to the coffee shop and talking to the people sitting at the counter who might be in your town. It's talking to people all over the planet and giving you really a megaphone that's not just your voice or not just your writing, but live video to do that as well. And it's not just one company providing that. There are a number of companies, as Mr. Zuckerberg will remind you, that are all competing to try and be the place to handle that. So we're seeing a lot of decentralization, and we're also seeing kind of a generational shift in how technology is perceived and how it can be applied as a tool.
Yep. And we're seeing a big difference between the vast majority of our Congress critters,
right,
who still list their fax numbers.
Yes.
Fax numbers.
I tried to tell my kids what a dot matrix printer was this morning.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, do you mean like a fax? And I could tell by the way they were asking that they didn't know what that was either.
Right. And then on the other hand, you have the new breed, people like Rachel Barnhart.
Sure.
Who's the queen of social media.
Yep.
And lives on it. So we're going to see that change. But right now, we've still got 85-year-old people in Congress who have a stranglehold on their seat, until they die out. Frankly, you're not going to see a change.
No, there, it's going to be turbulent.
Yep.
It's going to be 50 years since the last turbulent era, and we're going to start to see that again.
Yep. I don't know if anybody watched the C-SPAN thing, but when C-SPAN suddenly brought up a Periscope feed, I thought I am actually in the 21st century.
Yes.
Me and Buck Rogers.
Right. Well, and it's a lot like Twitter was in the Middle East when they were
same idea.
Political unrest there as well.
Can't stop the signal, Mal.
That's how I would vote today.
Yep. All right. We got time. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Tom from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Well, I have a question about Chrome and cookies.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference between vanilla cookie and ad blocker plus? Can I use both at the same time?
Ad blocker plus, of course, is a product that will prevent you from seeing ads, but it doesn't do much really for cookies.
Now, maybe we should back up a minute for our listeners.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's talk about cookies for a minute, right? So cookies are small bits of code. There are essentially a unique number, a very long string of numbers that represents just you, probably letters and numbers. And websites can use those and ask your browser for them and then know who you are, or at least who you were the last time you visited.
They can also store information.
That's true.
So it's not just necessarily a string of numbers.
Right. It's not just a unique identifier.
Right.
It can also be a data store. So they can store information specific about you. And the question has become, how do we make sure that cookies are being used to help you, you know, to remember the things that you had in your shopping cart the last time you visited the e-commerce person or website? And how do you make sure that that your privacy is being protected? And some of the cookie blockers, or I'm sorry, the cookie tools will either help you manage those by either blocking them or refusing to create them or deleting them. And the ad tools are slightly different. So there are two different ways to keep track of your privacy.
Right. The vanilla cookie, which is actually the name of a product you can download from the Google Chrome store. It's called Vanilla Cookie Manager, and it's basically a cookie whitelist manager. So you say to it, look, I don't want any ads. I don't want to save any cookies except the ones that I do want to save.
Yeah.
And you've heard of the term
blocking them unless I tell you otherwise.
Right. So you've heard of the term blacklist. This is a whitelist. So we block all the ones except the ones that are on the whitelist. So, for example, if I want Google to remember me and my search queries and everything else, then I can whitelist Google and it will allow that to have a cookie. But the vanilla cookie manager does nothing for ads. Ads are a separate deal. Ads can certainly have cookies, but this doesn't specifically block ads, only the cookies that might come with those ads. Whereas ad blocker blocks the actual ad itself, so you don't even see it.
Well, every time I go on the internet, it seems I get many hundreds of cookies, and it just slows down my system quite a bit.
Yep.
You know?
Well, it doesn't really slow down your system much, but yes, there are hundreds of cookie. Everybody wants to put cookies on your site, and some of them are useful. So, for example, let's say you go to Facebook, right? If Facebook sets, well, Facebook is a bad example because they have the universal cookie, which is a bad thing. But let's ignore that
Amazon,
for a minute.
I was making an example earlier that you want to have Amazon remember that you were shopping earlier and looking at certain items, but you had also added three different items to your cart, and because you suddenly had to go out to dinner, you walked away from your machine and your session timed out. But when you come back, you want them to know who you are,
right,
and what you've been looking at, and this helps with that.
Right. So cookies are not necessarily a bad thing.
They're a tool.
They're a tool. And like any tool, they can be both good and bad. So AdBlock will do ads and stuff, but it doesn't do much about cookies. Vanilla Cookie will block cookies, but doesn't do much about ads. So they're really two entirely separate products.
Great. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Anytime, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Yep, thanks. So, yeah, cookies are both good and bad. Facebook has something called the universal cookie.
What's that?
I can't tell you because we're going to take a break. But I'll tell you after the break.
On the flip side, we'll catch it.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, what's his name? Dave Enright, Meet Nick French. Without Steve here, I have to do it in a different way, and it confuses me. I may or may not be Nick Francesco. This is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I did not acknowledge that Dennis is sitting in for, has graciously consented to sit in for Steve.
Yeah, but he only did it halfway.
No. Yeah, he did only do it halfway. That's exactly true.
I got some
true.
Bad information.
Yeah, we will get on Steve's case.
It's Steve's fault, really, when
yeah,
you get right down to it.
He dropped the ball.
You can't see it here in the studio, but they're shaking their fists in Steve's general direction.
Steve Ray.
Dropped the ball and, you know, just left us hanging.
That's he just a, left us hanging. That's okay. Yeah. But you were asking about super... They're not universal cookies. They're super cookies.
Super cookies.
Super cookie.
Okay. What's that?
It's not like Super Grover.
Oh,
which is what I was thinking.
That's it. I'm out of here. No, come back.
It's a browser cookie that's designed to be permanent on a person's computer.
Permanent, huh?
They're more difficult to detect than regular cookies, and they're designed not to be deleted, so they're hard to delete.
Okay.
The problem with them is that they can, if used, I suppose I would say incorrectly, they can actually cross browser sessions.
Okay.
So, for example, Facebook uses a super cookie, which tries to see what you're doing at other websites as well.
Yes. Okay. I think I've heard about this.
Yes. So that they then have more information about you than you're willing to give out,
sure.
By the way.
Right.
And certainly more information than they can get just from, although God knows everybody puts everything on Facebook. But more information they can get just from Facebook.
You know what I will say about Facebook? Not that I look at the ads often on Facebook, but I will say the ads are generally targeted for things I'm actually interested in, and
right.
Not about, you know, timeshares in Las Vegas or
right.
Or
well, and
you know,
that's because
buying your next catamaran or
right. Let's say you go to Google and search for new tires for your bike.
Sure.
And so you're searching for the type of tire that a long distance biker,
sure,
bicyclist,
yep.
Excuse
of course.
Me. would use. Well, they're probably going to show you ads for new, whatever they call those, street bikes, long-term, long-distance, what do they call them?
Ultramarathon.
Ultramarathon,
yeah.
Bicycles.
Sure.
And whereas they're probably not going to show you baby strollers because you're not looking for those.
You're not interested
in
anymore.
Those. Right.
No.
So what they've done is use that super cookie to pay attention to all the stuff you look at even on other websites,
right.
And then that gives them more of an insight into what Dennis Worster would really like to look at.
That's a much broader profile of,
right.
Of who I am, what I'm looking for.
Now, there are people who do not like the fact that
right.
Somebody like Facebook uses super cookies. So what many of them do, and frankly, I am among them, I use Chrome to browse everything except Facebook.
Okay.
And I use Firefox to browse Facebook.
Okay.
So the cookie will see only, it can't cross browsers.
Probably not. Yeah.
Probably not yet. Right. So right
week.
Now, at least.
For now, you're good.
Now I'm good. Now, if I only go and look at stuff on Facebook with Firefox, then it never knows what my Google searches are. It never knows what I go and look at on Wood. It never, you know, never knows any of that stuff.
Right, right. When that becomes not enough, I do know people, and I'm not going to name any names.
You know people?
Well, just a few.
Wow.
They're great.
People are great.
Dennis is special.
Yeah.
And what do those people do?
Well, they will fire up a virtual machine to do browsing in.
Yes.
Specifically when they are searching for gifts for people.
Yep.
On like a shared computer. And then they will shut the virtual machine down when they're done shopping. And that way the everything has been swept up behind.
If you don't save that virtual session, nobody ever will know.
That's right. You can
roll it back.
Very clever. So you keep that in mind. Keep that in your back pocket.
I will. I will keep that in my back pocket.
For when super cookies start jumping browser sessions and browsers.
On the other hand, I use Linux, so in my house, that's like having a lock and key.
Right.
In general.
Yeah.
Although my wife has picked up considerably how it works.
You must be at least this specialized to use this computer.
This crazy. she gets up early in the morning, of course, on Saturdays. We have a stand at the public market, so she gets up about 4 a.m.
Okay.
And she wants to check the weather and all that stuff.
Of course.
Right? And my computer's right around the corner in another room as opposed to hers is downstairs.
Right.
And she wants to do that first. So she's pretty good now. She's pretty conversant with Linux. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But wait a minute. Yeah. Has she no tablet? Has she no cell phone?
Yes and yes, but she likes the big screen.
Okay.
And being able to look at it, not just the weather, but the 10-day forecast and... You know, if there's a...
At 4 a.m., she's not looking at the traffic. I'll tell you that much.
She's not. She's certainly not looking at the traffic. Although now, of course, because it's right by the inner loop.
Right. what the remains of the inner loop. It's turning into kind of a Pac-Man shape right now.
Right.
They're working real hard on that. I work downtown near that, and it's interesting to see the giant mound of dirt be pushed around, and they've sort of flattened most of it out now, and they had filled in all of the roadway. And I'm cautiously optimistic about how that's going to go. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening in that section of town.
Sadly, I'm one of those people who used the inner loop constantly.
Mm.
And so I now have to find my way around the city. Once the city streets return to being city streets.
Right.
I have to find my way around.
Got to get your crisscross lookup.
Yeah, exactly.
Figure out your different
Google tells me where to go.
And luckily, they just fixed... Over there by the Jazz Festival, the crossover for East Avenue.
Right. Yeah, I heard about
because that.
Because that
would have been a little sticky trying to get around to that other venue, which is on the other side of this expressway
right.
that they
That's
shut
right.
down.
Right. Yeah, it was the other one's over by Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, it would be a real problem if you told people, well, you have to go to Cleveland first.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
switch trains.
Right.
Which I want to kind of jump in here for a second and just remind folks, the Jazz Fest is going on. It started last night. It was great. A lot of great music is out there. And please, folks, you know, a lot of folks, and I've heard this countless times, sit there and say, well, I'm really not into jazz. Well, you know what? You're missing out on some great music. If you take the time and actually just look at the lineup for the Xerox International Jazz Festival, we are one of the top 10 jazz festivals now in the nation. Check it out in the lineup. The variety of music is unbelievable. It's not just jazz.
So if you soul get and pop and
it's
everything
R&B.
Else.
Excuse me. The one group that I keep telling folks every year is Soul Stew. They're next Thursday night right there on Gibbs Street. There's a lot of free concerts. We have our tent down on Gibbs Street. Please come on down. Say hello. I'll be down there again Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then again, you know, from time to time, we'd love to have you folks just step down. And like we say, if everybody that came to the Jazz Festival would drop a dollar in, $1, I heard some statistics last night that last year over 200,000 people came to the Jazz Festival.
Yeah.
If just half of them dropped $1 in, we wouldn't have to have the fund drives every year that you folks constantly hear us begging for money and that and saying, you know, we need your support. That if everybody that came to it would just drop in $1, we'd be golden.
That's right. As a matter of fact, we had a one-day pledge drive yesterday.
Yep.
I was apparently a week early last week.
Well, it's no problem. I mean, we're still taking pledges.
That's my point. If anybody would like to pledge, you can do so securely online at jazz901.org. We're several thousand dollars short of our goal for the year, and we would rather not see any changes made to any lineups. And you can help make that happen. If you're listening to this station, you know that there's at least one show that you like, so you should, it would be great if you would.
And if you go down there, I can tell you this is sort of the side. If you go down there and pledge live and fill out the form, I know, Rob, you know, we got a few extra little tchotchkes, like CDs and that we might be able to just hook you up with. Plus, when you do, just like during the fund drive, we have special gifts that you can select from depending on your level of membership.
Right.
So it's a win-win all the way around, and it's a tax deduction. And I was talking to another friend of mine, Jeff, last night, and said, you know what? One nice thing about the Jazz Festival, as I'm sitting there outside the tent watching people go by, there's such a variety, young, old, in between.
Sure.
And I've been going to the Jazz Fest. I just looked at all the different things. I've been going there since 2010. Not once in all the years that I've been going to the Jazz Fest have I ever seen a fight or anything else or rude people up there. Folks are up there to have a great time. Yeah. It's a family environment. You can go down there, young and old, and enjoy some great music. And what better way to, you know, expose your kids to some fantastic music? And it's free.
And it's free.
That's right.
Yeah, and great food vendors and everything else.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the food vendors there are going to be fantastic. There's all the regular shops that are there throughout the rest of the year that would be happy to come and see you come through the door.
And it's going to be a beautiful week. So if you get a chance, please stop on down. And if we're there, you know, say hello.
Say hello, yeah. Give us a wave.
That was my shtick for
you. And if you're not, if you are going to go down, please drop a few bucks in the kitty at Jazz 90.1's booth. And if you're not going to go down, please pledge securely online at jazz901.org.
You can do it.
You can do it. It only takes a couple of minutes, and it's only a few bucks and anything at this point.
I'll tell you what, if you make a donation, call us up and tell us, and we will thank you loudly.
Yeah.
We'll mention your name.
That's right.
The other thing is, it's surprising because we can tell the folks that listen to our show, because they'll come up to me, they'll see me there and go, hey, I listen, here's my dollar. And there's one gentleman, just about every night, he goes by, here's my dollar.
Oh, nice.
And he drops a dollar in every night.
Good for him. God bless him.
It's folks like that, you know, really make it, that for us, you know, giving up our Saturdays, that make it all so worthwhile.
That's right.
Yep.
That's cool.
I had a little procedure done. Look, they ripped hair off my arm when they... Okay. I had a little procedure done. Yeah, I didn't notice that before.
This is a computer show.
Yeah. Had a little procedure done the other day in the hospital, and there were a number of people who recognized me. And of course, my standard line is, you know, they say, I know you from somewhere. My standard line, of course, is, I do porn.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's that shiny forehead.
It's the shiny forehead. Exactly. Now you know.
But then, we won't go there.
Still right.
Then when I explain
to
them who I am, I always remind them they should probably throw a couple of bucks at us as well in order to keep this show and all our shows on the air. You tend to forget, because we're in Rochester, that there are so few jazz stations left in the world. And so few, yeah, I know, eight. And there are so few stations, one, that would have this show on it. So we have a vested interest in keeping this station on the air.
And the thing of it is when I do my Thursday night shows, I'm always encouraging folks, you know, to pick up the phones and give me a call. If I've got it in the library, you know, I'm going to pull it out and play it for you. I'm just that way. It's not like your other radio stations. You go, could you play this song for me? And the minute they hang up, they're no chance in heck are they going to play it for you.
But where do you ever find live DJs anymore anyway?
Very few.
Right.
But here at Jazz 90.1, we realize that you folks, you know, it's because of you that we're here and on the air. So that's why on Thursday nights, like I say, I'll encourage folks, give me a call then. And they do. There's a number of folks that I've got some regulars that call in and say, hey, could you play this or that? And if I got it in the library, I'm doing it.
Cool.
Yep. And that's the sort of thing that we do here that you don't see in a lot of other stations anymore. Now, and let's talk about Sound Bites, because that's a show you're listening to.
Oh.
We've been on a couple of different stations over the years, but the one that has kept us on the air and
embraced the show,
embraced the show very much is Jazz 90.1. You know, this studio, frankly, is not set up for a talk show, but they made it work as best they could afford to do, and we're very pleased and very delighted to remain on this station all the time.
That's right. They saw the value.
Yeah. That was Barbara, and she was hearing me talk about taking requests. She asked for this one song. I go, I'm not taking requests right now. I'm sorry. She goes, well, maybe I'll see you down at Jazz Fest. I said, come on down.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll take requests. And on Thursday nights, folks, yes, I do take requests, but this is a computer show. So
that's true.
We
take questions, not requests.
If you see him at Jazz Fest, maybe he'll sing a few bars for
you. Yeah, I sing solo. Solo, you solo. Do not hear me.
Nor do you want to.
No, I admit it.
Dave has many talents.
Yeah.
But singing isn't one of them.
Not so much.
I can't, as my grandfather used to say, I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. Two of them, for that matter.
Yep.
I should
read a quick news item before we move on.
All right.
Apple has released firmware updates for its airport wireless base station in order to fix...
Are you playing music? Time to go?
It's time for a break?
Already?
All right, we'll take the break instead. It's 39 minutes after the hour. Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, you, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll talk about Apple's airport wireless base stations when we come back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before I read the news, I should let you know that for those of you who don't own Chromebooks, you should know that during the break, I updated my Chromebook.
Nice.
That's all. Just during the break.
Click, click.
Click, click. One click. And it rebooted, and I was done. And I'm up to version 51. I'm waiting for version 53. Although I don't think it's going to matter on this particular machine.
What's in 53?
53 is the one that will allow Android apps to run in the browser on the Chromebook.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to run on this old model. Mm-hmm. The older models don't have really the right hardware.
Well, time to go shopping.
Well, that's going to happen once all the new crop are out.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I'm waiting to see what the new crop are. I would like a touch screen. I would like something that folds up.
Okay.
And so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
But before we get to any of that, which will be months from now, let's read a little news. Apple has released firmware updates for its airport wireless base stations in order to fix a vulnerability that could put the devices at risk of hacking. According to Apple Security, the flaw is a memory corruption issue stemming from DNS, domain name system, data parsing that could lead to arbitrary code execution. The company released firmware updates 7.6.7 and 7.7.7 for Airport Express, Airport Extreme, and Airport Time Capsule base stations with 802.11n Wi-Fi, as well as Airport Extreme and Airport Time Capsule base stations with 802.11ac Wi-Fi. The Airport Utility 6.3.1 or later on OS 10 or Airport Utility 1.3.1 or later on iOS can be used to install the new firmware versions of the airport devices, the company said in an advisory. Forget the numbers. You need the latest airport security or on your operating system.
Oh, absolutely.
On your desktop or the
Apple.
Latest. Right. Or the latest airport utility on your iPad or iPhone.
Right. To download the latest firmware, to put it on your device and keep you safe.
As is typical for Apple security announcements, the company did not release details about possible exploitation scenarios and did not assign a severity rating for the flaw. However, arbitrary code execution, especially through a remote vector like DNS, is as bad as it can possibly get for a vulnerability. So make sure you do this update.
Yep.
What is not clear is whether the data parsing issue is in the DNS server or the DNS client. If the error is in the parsing of queries received from LAN computers in the client, it would limit the attack to local network. Whereas if the flaw is in the parsing of DNS requests in the server, it could be exploited remotely, which is really, really, really bad. Now, when a DNS client asks a server to resolve a domain name, the query is eventually passed on to one of the internet's 13 so-called root DNS servers, which are in reality about 150 different servers.
Right.
Maybe probably 1,000 servers. Those servers indicate the authoritative DNS server for the query domain name. Basically, the way it works is this. Let's say I want to go to rit.edu.
Okay.
Let's say I want to go to darth.scb.rit.edu.
All right.
That's the computer name Darth in the domain, in the subdomain SCB College of Business.
College, yeah.
Saunders College of Business. At the RIT campus. So it's darth.scb.rit.edu. So I put that in my browser, and my computer says I have no idea where that is.
How do I find that?
Yeah, so
because
let me go.
Computers don't use those domain names. They use Internet Protocol addresses, right?
Right. If I gave IP it 129.21.whatever it is, then it would work.
In the same way that you, back in the old days, would go to your phone book and look up your new friend's address and phone number in order to call them on the phone. You don't just speak into the phone and say, Sarah, give me Larry.
Right.
Like it's the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah.
That's right.
So what happens is the computer goes out to the internet and says, I need to know where darth.scb.rit.edu is. And the definitive name server for EDU things says, all right, I don't know where darth.scb is, but I know where RIT is.
Right.
Why don't I send you there?
Go check over there.
RIT then says, yeah, I don't know where Darth is, but I know where SCB is. Let me send you there. And SCB says, oh, Darth is this address. And then it comes back, and now I can talk to Darth.
Right. Now, that happens in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, it's that fast. But it requires those DNS servers. Without the DNS servers, the internet does not work. You'd have to memorize all the addresses.
Right.
And while an address like 129.21.3.17 is fairly easy to memorize,
I know that
FFE3 colon and
right.
16 more digits is not that easy to memorize. So that's what needs to be done. And attackers could register rogue domain names, and if they can break into that authoritative DNS server out on the internet, they could exploit the fact that
That's
you
right.
are asking them for something. Or, as in this particular case, if there's an error in the way that the DNS is being interpreted, they could do a kind of a man-in-the-middle attack. If they can jump in anywhere on the internet between you and the authoritative server,
That's
they
right.
can say, oh, I'm the authoritative server. This is where you want to go.
Right, right. No, no, listen to me.
And where,
I have the real information for you.
Right, 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 exactly.
With this horrible accent.
With this horrible accent. I had a friend who had only one accent. He called it muddle European. while nobody cares what's at Darth, believe me, nobody cares what's at Darth. What if that's your bank?
Sure.
You know, or what if it's Facebook? Or, you know, what if it's whatever... where you have actual personal information. You type the information into what you think is the real thing. They now have all your credentials. They could go to the real thing and strip your bank account.
And pretend to be you.
Or do whatever they want on Facebook with your name, et cetera, et cetera. So if you have, in fact, an airport router, you need to keep it up to date.
Yes.
And if you'd like to talk about that, please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, just like Walter did from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter, what's up?
Hello there, Nick. Got a question for you about the Jazz 90.1, in that I've been reading in the Post newspaper, and I even went to the website, and there's something about a new streaming service.
Yes.
Yes, I'm confused. What does that do with you? You know, that is Soundbites itself, because I'm reading it, and it sounds like it's a listen live, and then there's a listen streaming or something. What can you tell me?
Okay, there's two different streaming things. Streaming. Let's talk about streaming.
It's good that you called.
It's good that you called because we don't know. No,
no.
Here's how it works. There is the current Jazz 90.1 live stream.
Yeah.
Which is in a gold. You can click the gold button on the website to listen live.
Right.
Or click the little listen live thing.
And that's the same one that's always been there, right?
Right, and that's been there for a while, and right now you can, if you're outside the listening area, as they call it, and we just, one of the reasons we're in a shortfall at the moment, we just upgraded our antennas. We reconfigured the antennas to give a better signal throughout New York, wherever we can hit.
Yeah.
And that's either online now or just coming online. Anyway,
okay.
The point is, if you're outside that radio listening area, you can still listen to us live on the internet from anywhere on Earth. But many people listen to that Jazz stream. We've got, what, about 100 people on right now?
Ballpark,
100 people. And if all of you were members of the station, by the way, we wouldn't have any issues. Anyway, here's the deal. We're instituting a new live stream, a second live stream that will be blues and big band.
Ooh.
And that will be a second stream. It's right now about 108 hours a week of classical and new blues music from 6 a.m. Monday to 6 p.m. on Friday, and then big band all weekend from 6 p.m. Friday to 6 a.m. Monday. And that new station should launch somewhere around August 1st. You'll be able to see the stream. You'll be able to get to the stream live from jazz901.org or, of course, via the free mobile app for Android and iPhone. And the station will also include rebroadcasts of things like Sinatra and Company and American Standards by the Sea, Big Band Friday, Blue Spectrum, Big Road Blues, stuff like that. Oh. So it's essentially a second stream.
Okay, so it's going to be, but it has a target of type of music. So therefore, if I want my polka fix or my German polka fix, I got to listen to the live stream. Listen now.
Right, and that's Saturdays, yeah. Right? But during the week, it's jazz.
Got it.
So if you're a jazz fan, you've got the stream already all week long, and on weekends you've got sound bites and polka and nueva
German music
and the German music,
the other
and,
variety of music
and the
that's
Latina
right.
music and all the other stuff. But if you're a fan, starting August 1st, if you're a fan of blues or big band, then you'll have a second station that will play those all week.
Okay, very good. Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
Then? It's just a couple of weeks ago, I called in and mentioned about Cub Linux. Did you ever give that a shot?
I did. I did.
Yeah.
I put Cub Linux on.
Yeah.
On an old laptop, and it works great. It looks like a Chromebook. It works like Linux.
Okay.
So, you know, you can do any of the things you normally do in Linux, but if you stick with just the user interface, the front end,
yeah,
it works just like a Chromebook. It's fast, it's easy, and it's pretty cool. Updating is a little different. Of course, it updates like Linux. And if you wanted to, you could, of course, run LibreOffice or, you know, Firefox or whatever,
sure.
Because it's real Linux underneath.
Or GIMP or what have you.
Right. But it looks at the front end. Basically, what they just did was take Linux and create a front end that looks like a Chromebook. So it's pretty cool. I've tried it. I've played with it. It works great. I don't know, obviously, if it will ever run anything like Android apps, which Chromebooks newer Chromebooks will be able to do soon, and things like that. But in terms of look and feel, it sure looks a heck of a lot like a Chromebook. And as long as you stay out of the terminal app,
right? And you won't get into too much trouble.
And you can't get into too much trouble. And you can right click and get a drop down menu of all the things that a normal Linux machine would do, but. Again, you don't need to use any of that if you just want to work it like a Chromebook. It's very cool.
Yeah. Can I ask you then quickly about this? Is it the Chromium or is it really using Chrome? Because here's the point. My wife wanted to use Chromium because we run Linux.
Right.
She put down Chromium, but she could not get into her Chrome or whatever you want, Google storage through Chromium.
Really?
Yeah, she couldn't do it. So
that's weird because I can. You have to get the error message she gets. Chromium is essentially whether you're using Chrome or Chromium or Firefox or Midori or Edge, you can get into Drive and create documents and do all that stuff and your photos and everything else just the way you normally would on a Chromebook.
Okay.
So if she couldn't do it with Chromium, then that's a separate issue.
Okay.
And I would need to know what sort of error message she got. But I have used, like I said, I've got Chromium on that, and I've got an old Linux machine that is only 32-bit Linux, and it can't do Chrome anymore either. So I'm using Chromium on that, and I can do whatever I need to do in Google stuff through that. So Chromium certainly does do Google. So I haven't found anything it doesn't do yet.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you very much. I think I'll give that a try on one of my old laptops then, too. Thanks.
There you go. Have fun.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
This is one of the really nice things. You know, Chromebooks are kind of amazing, inexpensive and fast and usable. I'm using one right now. You're soaking in it. And, but if you've got an old laptop sitting around, there are a couple of things. Neverware has a product called Cloud Ready, and now there's this Cub Linux, that looks and feels like Chrome. Like a Chromebook. So you can breathe. You know, there's older machines not fast enough for Windows 10, not able to run any of that stuff. But you can still get a lot of life out of them by turning them into a pseudo Chromebook.
Right.
Right. And do 99.99999% of the stuff that you want to do fairly easily and fairly quickly. Again, older laptops, of course, are going to run slower. Because they're old and they probably have an underpowered, you know, what we today consider underpowered. You know, I've got a netbook that in the day was the hottest thing since laser sliced bread. And now I look at it and think, geez, and crackers, it's like waiting for a calendar
right
to change. But in the day it was the new hotness, right? Now it's the old broken down stuff. But,
yes. I'm searching for it. There was a similar product. Oh, that was mentioned on a podcast I listened to, and I'm trying.
I have, by the way, successfully put Neverware's Cloud Ready on an old MacBook.
Neat.
It works great.
What's Cloud Ready?
Obviously, anything that has an Intel processor,
right?
Intel type.
Oh, from Neverware.
Yeah, Neverware.
Okay, I did a quick Google search, and Neverware came up as a purple ink and not blue, so that must have been it.
Yep, there you go.
Okay. Yes.
I was some
very
pretty
interested
cool
in learning more about that.
Well, yeah, it's very cool. We'll talk about it. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But we know you're slow learners, so you get to do it again after a slightly longer break. If you're on the line, please hold on. We will get to you. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966 5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, I apologize. I was talking over the intro. I was just saying that you can also download Neverware's Cloud Ready, neverware.com, and WARE, Neverware. Get it? Neverware, as in software. Yeah. And you can put it on a thumb drive and try it from there. So that'll work as well, if you don't want to install it right on your machine day one.
And their logo does not contain a raven anywhere near it.
No, it doesn't, thank heavens. However...
that would have been a Poe choice.
Oh, my golly! Wow! Yeah, exactly. of course, it'll run very slow from a thumb drive, but it'll run, and you can try it out. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tony from Rochester, New York. What's up, Tony?
I wonder if you could give some instruction how to update that Airport Extreme, was it?
Yes.
Yes.
I just
bought it one a couple weeks ago, and so I guess it probably isn't updated, or do I have to do it through the computer?
You do it through the computer. There's a tool that's built into the computer called Airport Utility.
Yes.
And when you run Airport Utility, it will attempt to connect to your airport base station, whether that's the Airport Extreme or the Airport Time Capsule or the Airport Express.
Okay.
Then you have to supply a username and password to log into it. And most often, inside the airport utility tool, there'll be some type of indication that the firmware might need to be updated. Sometimes that's like a yellow triangle with a black exclamation point in it, or a red stop sign of some kind, or some type of highlighting that lets you know that, hey, this device may not have the latest software, and by going through a procedure, you can bring that up to date.
Okay, great. That's it?
Yeah, it's really pretty straightforward. I think you'll do just fine.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
One thing, Apple makes stuff easy. You can't deny that, so that's a pretty good deal. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's true. They get a lot of heat from what I'll call power users and super nerds that really want lots and lots of control over their system.
Right.
But when it comes to day-to-day use, and I can say this firsthand after playing with Microsoft Outlook for the last few months, Apple's software design does look kind of minimalist, but boy,
were you
sure
that bored?
Doesn't get in your way. Was that?
You were that bored?
I was so bored. I said, let's try
this
Outlook
play
thing.
With Outlook.
So I
need a 7 or 9 year project. Let's play with Outlook.
Yeah. And then they'll drop it.
Well, we're getting ready to deploy the latest version where I work, and I needed to be comfortable installing it and updating it and doing all of that remotely so that I don't
and how's that going?
400 machines. It's going pretty well. We've got lots of infrastructure in place to distribute software and to keep it up to date where I work, and it's a constant challenge. In fact, this coming week, I'm headed to a conference at State College, Pennsylvania, that's all about Macintosh administrators and how do they do the things they do and how can they do them better.
And you know what that's called?
It's called Mac Admins at PSU.
No, it's called job security.
Yeah, right.
Trying to keep Microsoft going.
Well,
yeah,
that's what I've always said. God bless Bill Gates. If it wasn't for him, I'd be an out of work actor.
I thank printers.
I don't know what I'd be doing.
Exactly.
For me,
all
it's
those
printers.
Years.
Yeah, printers.
The number of car payments I've made by people calling me up and saying, "I don't know what it is, but suddenly I can't print."
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, fantastic revenue source. Learn to fix printers, kids.
There you go,
fine.
Kids.
You'll never starve.
People ask me all the time, what do I need to do? What should I learn first? I tell them you need to know two things.
Okay.
You need to know typing.
Typing is good.
And you need to know COBOL.
COBOL, okay.
Mm-hmm. You will never be a superstar, but there will always be a job for you.
That's right.
I don't know of a single bank that still doesn't have a million COBOL programs out
there.
That's
no lie.
A lot of schools still have COBOL, a lot of research facilities still use COBOL. You will always have a job. It'll never be a glamorous job,
right?
But you'll always have something to fall back on.
Mm-hmm. Popular language for development in the 1980s and what late 70s.
Yeah, COBOL, PL1.
Yep, all the job control
language. Codex.
Fortran.
For me it was PL1 and COBOL.
Right.
A little Fortran, but mostly COBOL and PL1.
Right. Well, yeah, the students across the world are not actively taking online courses to learn these things. And then that way you have a specialized skill where you're not competing with 10,000 other candidates for a position.
Right. Right now, I know any number of 60 and 65-year-old people who are still employable because they know COBOL and Fortran.
That's right.
And JCL and PL1 and like that. So,
and when it comes to system administration, the number one thing I can tell people is be very comfortable with the scientific method. Understand the idea of documenting things, changing one thing, and then
troubleshooting.
Noting the results.
Nobody understands troubleshooting anymore.
And in your procedures and that you've got to definitely document.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's one thing used to tick me off is I'd sit there and do a procedure or get somebody else's procedure and wondered, what the heck are they tying this to and what are they trying to accomplish?
That's if they have a procedure.
Yeah. And it's all,
down somewhere.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, interlinked, folks. And I know it's a Greek to a lot of folks, but it can be make your life so much easier if folks would take the time to do, if they did this procedure or that, or even within their code, document. Document.
Yeah.
That's one thing my professors were always stressing, is document the heck out of it. And if you didn't, it's where
you
take off.
Look up Citebooks, Citebook, Citebook.
Uh-huh.
If you aren't keeping a Citebook for your computer, You might have. I'm getting a new computer, so I'm going to start a new site book.
Okay.
I'm very excited about
this. That's just where you document the things you've done.
Document everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. What is my operating system? What would I install first?
Right.
What do I install second? What happens when I do this? What caused the problem? That way, if I have to ever go back and reinstall something or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, particularly at work. Right, because computers only ever die at 3 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely. I'm called in to redo a computer at 3 in the morning. I'm not, honestly, and I'll admit this, I'm not at my best.
Sure.
Why?
So if I can just open the site book and say step 1, step 2, step 3,
excellent. I mean, slacker.
I am.
It's all about putting, one of the classes I took at RIT was about human factors.
Yep.
And understanding that, yeah, your brain may not work as well at some points in the day as it may at others.
Of course, then
I eventually
got to the point where I would just say to Dave Ballard, who used to work for me and now has my job, Dave, you go in and fix that.
Sure.
That was better. Then I could just roll over and go back to bed.
Yeah, right. So they say that what you have to do is understand that there are two kinds of knowledge. There is knowledge in your head. Those are the things you've learned, your experiences. And then there's knowledge in the world. And those are things that you create. Those are documents or a series of procedures. And the things in the world you can share with others. You can have them comment on that or attempt to improve them. And it's a way to distribute that knowledge.
The problem is the things we know are getting less, and the things out in the world are more. I used to remember
now you've got 50,
60 phone numbers.
Sure.
Now I don't even know my own phone number. I got to look it up on my phone.
That's right. That's right.
It's getting ridiculous. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve, patiently waiting on the line from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm actually calling about my call from last week.
A follow-up. Okay.
A couple things. One of the questions I asked was multiple ISOs on the same thumb drive, and I came up with a solution that I think will work.
Yeah?
Put them both on the same thumb drive and just change the extension on one of them. And plug it, a thumb drive, into my phone or tablet to change it back, whichever one I want to go.
Hmm. Nice idea.
Okay,
I'll be honest with you, Steve.
Deceptively simple.
It's deceptively simple, but it's also, to me, more work than just buying a second thumb drive.
Mm. But I've got one I keep with me all the time, no matter where I am. Anyway, okay, now, second question. I put Rosa on a very old HP. I was going to gift it. Would I be better off for the person using it if I put Neverware on it?
It depends on the person.
Probably. Well, yes.
Right? But if
are they going to come to you for support?
Right.
Yeah, but with the Rosa on there, I'm writing out a sheet. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. Where if I put the Neverware on it, I'm thinking I wouldn't have to do that.
Most likely you would not. You would probably spend a few minutes saying, look, what do you use most? Throw that on the button bar across the bottom. You're done.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of done. If you're looking for dead simple, then Chromebooks or the Neverware or the Cub Linux work great for that. If you're looking for power, which comes with complexity. Remember, with great power comes great complexity.
Hmm.
Right.
That's not the way I heard it.
Then you need something. Well, then again, I can't shoot webs from my wrists.
Well, not yet.
Not yet. I had the nuclear stress test. Something's going to happen.
We're just waiting.
It's going to be the Hulk or Spider-Man's going to happen.
We're all in the studio gently sliding away, just in case. Get out of the blast radius here.
If you're gonna put something more powerful like Mint Rosa, then you really have more training to do.
Right. So it's Neverware or what else?
Well, Mint Rosa or you know something. Oh, in terms of that, Neverware or Cub Linux. We talked about Cub Linux. Cub Linux is a version of Linux where the front end is essentially a Chromebook. The problem is it's not really a Chromebook, it's really Linux. So updating is a little more complex, et cetera, et cetera. If you want as close to a Chromebook experience as you can get on an older machine, then you want Neverware's Cloud Ready.
Okay. And one last question. How do I clone my all the time I spent setting this up for Linux Rosa, I'd like to clone that so I can put it back without having to spend all the time?
There are cloners that are out there, like Clonezilla.
Do I want to clone it or ghost it?
Well, you
well,
could you
ghost
could ghost
is a product that
they don't
makes
make
clones.
Ghosts anymore.
Well, yeah, that's an old Norton tool.
But
same
if
idea.
You if you've got it around, that's great. But there's an open source a newer one called Clonezilla that's free. It's open source. I think it's open source. Certainly free. You get it at clonezilla.org, clonezilla.org.
Okay.
And you can, again, you download it, you put it on a USB or on a DVD or whatever, it's a CD.
Optical drive, yeah.
And then you can boot it up, and let's say you put it on a thumb drive, so you stick it in there, you boot up with that, you say, I want to clone my entire system, you throw in a DVD, depending on how much system you have.
Right.
And boom, you back it up and you're done.
Sounds like a plan. So I guess I'm going to redo it with Neverware then.
Well, look at all the knowledge and experience you're gaining.
Well, yeah. And they're not, though. They don't get to play with the Linux, so.
Right. Keep it simple.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Anytime.
Yep, have fun.
Yep, I will.
That's a lot of fun.
The old KISS approach.
Yeah, I say in general, if people want me to set up a machine for them, that's fine. But if I'm going to have to do the support, then I get to pick what goes on it.
That's exactly right.
And if I can make things as simple as possible or as easy to troubleshoot remotely as possible.
And it doesn't get a lot easier than Chromebooks.
No, I agree.
It really doesn't. In terms of what you can do anything. In terms of how you do it, it's a browser.
Yep.
You're done.
Right.
You know? So
you know.
It's not that hard, and it's not that...
We've had browsers for 20 years now.
Yeah.
They are relatively well understood. Click on the thing you want to see or do next.
Right. And it's got a button bar across the bottom. You can put whatever you want. Like I just said to Steve, find out what this person does. Oh, I need email. I need a calendar. I need to create documents.
Right.
Put them all in the button bar. Bam, 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 bam. And then the one that looks like an envelope is your mail. The one that looks like a calendar is your calendar. The one that looks like a document is your document.
And the snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Snozzberries taste like snozzberries. Remind me when we're not on the air.
I will.
To tell you what Roald Dahl really thinks snozzberries are.
Okay. I can only imagine.
We'll only do that not on the air, however.
All right.
It's not what you think. It's worse. Okay. Anyway, and it's not what you're thinking now either. At any rate, the basic idea here is that you can have all kinds of things. I've got a calculator in there. I've got links to all the Google standard stuff. I've got a link to VMware's Horizon client.
Okay.
So I can just log into a Windows machine if I ever had the urge to shoot myself in the foot and
yes.
Didn't have a gun handy.
We were talking about that at work just
yep.
This past week.
Yeah. And YouTube and, you know, everything else. I can play games.
Right.
I can do whatever it takes. But what it takes right now is a break, and we're going to take one of those. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
Yeah,
it's
really.
It's unbelievable, but here
after
we are.
After all this time.
Wow. Whether you like it or not, here we are.
Uh-huh.
We should probably talk about, Google Fiber.
Mmm, delicious.
For those of you who do not have green light.
Yeah, we're all shaking our fists now back at Nick.
And I'm glowing.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I know you mean that from the heart.
Is there a real estate agent out there that will help me find a house and then constrain that?
The house next door to me is currently for sale.
Let's talk later.
Let's talk later. Don't laugh. The house on the other side just sold. Apparently, I'm a horrible neighbor. The house is on both sides.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's going on in the neighborhood?
It's the late night dancing naked on the roof. Right.
Yeah.
They actually got more than they would have gotten because they have fiber
sure.
coming into the house. It actually increases the value of your home.
What cut part of the cut did you get?
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, Google Fiber is acquiring San Francisco-based internet service provider WebPass. The news announced Wednesday means Google's own fiber service now has a well-established commercial provider of gigabit internet to aid its continued expansion. WebPass, which was founded way back in 2003, focuses on providing businesses with Ethernet-based fiber connections.
Ether-based would be something else.
Ether-based is an entirely other thing. Though it does provide residential gigabit internet in select markets for buildings built after 1995. Right now, they're in 5 major U.S. markets, San Francisco, San Diego, Chicago, Boston, and Miami. The company says it has more than 20,000 customers. By joining forces, we can accelerate the deployment, blah, blah, who cares. The deal should help Google Fiber with its Bay Area rollout, as well as giving it an edge against cable companies in larger apartment buildings located in urban markets. Google Fiber, of course, competes with, well, everybody else, mm-hmm. To reach customers in large apartment buildings, which the traditional telecoms typically lock down with multi-year agreements. WebPass has spent years making inroads in that department. As for the Bay Area, Google Fiber, which, as we remember, is a subsidiary of Alphabet Inc.
Nice.
Right? Announced San Francisco as its next target city back in February. So that's going to be pretty cool,
actually.
What
they need to do is raise the property values in San Francisco.
Right. And one of the other things that Google is actually looking at is using wireless to take that last mile.
Wow.
So instead of...
You have a WISP.
You have a WISP. Wireless internet service provider, exactly. Rather than having to string fiber to your home and having to deal with the right of ways and blah,
sure.
blah, blah, they can just beam it to you. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Right.
So San Francisco, huh?
So if you'd like to talk about, so now you're thinking of moving to San Francisco.
Oh, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, right, man. Particularly since, by the way, apparently the San Andreas Fault is moving.
Oh, yeah?
Again, yeah, there was a little article about how...
Gets blamed for everything.
That just got widened again a little bit. They don't know what's going on, but they're not happy. I'm staying on this side.
I think I saw that in a movie once.
Was yeah,
some
more
James
than
Bond
once.
Movie that they were trying to
yeah.
set up some new beachfront property?
More than once. Everything from the Superman movie to anything Dwayne Johnson's been in the last 2 years.
Good point.
Pretty much all of it.
Wow.
So what do you think of the pros and cons of wireless as the last mile? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or alternately, toll free. 1-800-790-0415. Those of you who are listening to us outside the 585 calling area, who are listening to us on the currently single stream that we have at Jazz 90.1, the up to 100 of you who are doing that right at the moment, we're pretty close to that number.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It just keeps bouncing up and down. 94?
Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
The max we can almost hit. 100.
Yeah, we can't hit 100. Max, I think we can hit is 97. And then it just starts choking because so many folks are trying to get it at it.
Oh.
The max we've ever been at, I think, is 97.
Again, had we had more money, more.
Yeah, we,
we would have more. But
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
He's doing the great job that he can right now with what we have. And
yeah, that is exactly true.
Yeah.
Wow.
We do. But yeah, so.
A wireless last mile sounds great. I mean, essentially, if you've got 4G or LTE data service to your tablet or to your phone, that's essentially what you're doing anyway.
Yep.
And there are lots of companies who are happy to sell you that. Are companies selling you services? Well, I guess they are. AT&T has done it for me for years to give you internet access straight to your tablet without having a line coming to your house.
Right.
And then you can use it any place like that.
The tablet I have with when I got my S5.
Your Verizon tablet.
I wound up getting a tablet with it.
Right.
And it was like $19.
Wow.
I love that tablet. You know, it's got its own phone number, even though it can't call out.
Right.
But I can sit there and connect and use, you know, my internet service through there because I get 6 gig, and which I don't burn through anyway. So
at right. that point, would you have a router that sits like a cable modem does?
Essentially.
Or would it just be a card that lives in your computer?
Oh, I see what you're asking. That's a very good question.
And, or maybe either, depending upon what's going on.
Well, it may just be regular Wi-Fi connection. Like, for example, if you have Time Warner cable, if you have Time Warner internet, you can get access to the thousands of Time Warner
hotspots,
but they have a name for them.
I'm sure.
Something Point. I forget what it is.
Okay.
Because I have Greenlight. But you get them all over the city.
Finds a way to get that in there.
Yeah.
We should dump.
I suppose if I had Greenlight, I'd feel the same way.
I'm just
hit
gloating.
The dump button.
I'm just gloating.
Boom. Boom.
That's all right. But the basic idea is that internet connection nowadays,
it's a utility,
is much more, and the government, by the way, agrees with that. You
right.
know, they just said that
the government, the water, sewer,
right? So it works internet. Like a utility. That's why we have to have net neutrality.
Right.
Now the ISPs are fighting that like mad because they want to charge us more for certain things. So if you use Netflix, they want to charge you more for that.
Right.
Because it uses up their bandwidth. Well, you know what? If you don't want people using your bandwidth, stop being an ISP.
Stop selling it. Or Netflix will just turn around and just use better compression in the future. And the ability to decompress it at your end will grow as the computing ability of your devices grow.
Right.
What I want to see is better batteries. I want to see more dense batteries. Because I think that's kind of the weak point as to where we are right now.
Of everything. I mean, we're really at the point where it's the one technology that has not changed since Tesla.
DC.
Well, Tesla was AC.
He was the AC guy.
Yeah, he was
the
AC guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, the batteries themselves, the makeup, they're picking different devices, they're picking different elements.
Right,
so you've got lithium, and you've got
but the way they work is exactly the same, and the fact that they can only charge a certain number of times, and that the charges disappear, and that really, you know, if I could have a 2.5 week battery or a 6 month battery, or how about what Tesla really did, which was power over the air?
Right, he was generating giant power stations that had big antennas on them.
That was the whole point behind Wardenclyffe.
Right. And that was in New Jersey? Uh-huh. Very nice. Wearing your T-shirt. Tesla Science Center at Wardenclyffe.
Right.
Tesla Science Center. R-E or E-R? E-R.org.
E-R.org, yeah.
Nice.
It's an American place.
Okay.
That's what he was going to do. And there are actually companies now. There's a TED Talk out there about wireless power. And they demonstrate it. And it works. I mean, well, we've said this before on the air. If we could see the radio spectrum, we'd be blind because there's so
it's
much
everywhere.
Stuff in the air right now. Why are we not harnessing that energy? That is energy being pulsed through the air. Why are we not harnessing that energy to power our, particularly devices like our phones, which draw so little power to begin with?
Right.
Right. I mean, my phone has a back on it that lets me set it on a wireless charger.
Oh, yeah, and induce.
It's an induction charger.
Induce the current to charge the battery.
Right. So why does that have to happen there? Why can't it happen in the air?
Hmm.
Why can't it be recharging while I'm walking around?
Interesting.
In fact, the answer is there really isn't much of a reason that I know of. Anybody out there who's a radio engineer.
Or how many watts per square meter do you need to get? So
well,
you can
right.
charge
whether
the battery.
Whether it can charge it up or just make it discharge slower, right? I mean, just, you know, give me a little bit extra. Because I don't use it all day long. It's not like I'm on it 10 hours a day.
Right.
It spends a lot of time in my pocket. So if it were trickle charging during that time.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, well, I already get to 2.5 days out of my battery anyway. But if I, you know, if I were to get 3 days or 5 days.
Right.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It would.
Or my watch. I get 3 days off my watch. I'd like to get 5 or 7.
Right.
Why not?
It really seems like this is the one area where companies are really trying to make machines thinner, because thinner is perceived as higher tech. Thinner is perceived as more valuable, yep. lighter weight, less bulky. Seems like it's less nerdy if it's thin.
Right.
And
thin is in.
And yes, thin is all. You can never be too rich, have too much RAM, or be too thin.
That's true.
So the idea that all the companies are making things look great in a photo shoot, and otherwise they're just kind of anorexic. They're just trying to get thinner and thinner and thinner.
Right.
And sometimes, at some point, there's going to be a company that comes in and says, thin is great until, you know, you really need that extra oomph. And I think the Panasonic has the Toughbook line, yep. that are built sort of like ammo boxes with laptops on the inside.
Yes, exactly right.
They're heavier, and they look like a Tonka truck from when you were a kid.
I don't know why there isn't a 7-day waiting period to buy one of those.
they're as heavy as an aircraft carrier, but, you know, the right. battery does last, and the keyboard is spill-proof and has little rain gutters at the side of it to collect all the soda and what have you.
The way we do it now is we make the processors either lower power.
Right, as a feature.
Mm-hmm. As a feature, or underpowered. Now, that works in a Chromebook because you don't need that much power.
Right. Sure.
So I can get 10 hours off of this battery.
Right, because it's sipping power.
It sips power.
Yeah. It's not being asked to do lots and lots of things.
Yeah, it's not running the whole darn operating system.
He's pointing at my MacBook Pro here.
Which doesn't get 10 hours.
It does not. It gets a general purpose machine
right.
that can be applied in a bunch of different directions.
Right.
And that comes at a price.
And that comes with more RAM and more power and better screen and all this other stuff that I don't need for this.
Sure.
So I don't have it, but you do, and that takes power.
That's right. Yes, it doesn't come for free.
Right, right. And if we had better batteries...
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have to worry about do I want more power or do I want more battery life?
Well, that's been always the contention between laptops and even cell phones.
Sure.
Right.
Because more and more cell phones are becoming people's computers.
Right. I had a flip phone that I had to charge once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
right?
I had a Palm Pilot that was the same way.
Right.
Black and white LCD screen.
Yeah, but,
right.
But now I've got an iPad. An iPad can do a million more things than that Palm ever could. But I only get 10 hours of battery life.
Yeah,
right. But when I sit in front of my laptop and I'm not connected to power and I think about, wow, 10-hour battery life, it's all relative.
Yeah.
You know, so the concept of having that is
Yeah, I can take this to a cafe or wherever I want to be. And I have done this and spend the entire day writing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And still come home with a third of a battery.
You know, that's one thing, you know, and they've been, I think they're literally giving them away now, is the Samsung S6.
Yeah.
You know, because again, it's so much thinner. It's millimeters. And you know what you gave up for it? Battery life.
Yep. And I'm sorry, to change batteries.
Yeah, and cell phones are so darn thin as they are, you know, right. that they are now. That couple of millimeters didn't really make that much difference. And to lose that much battery life? No, I think if they took a survey, most folks would say, no, give me more battery life, because that's the one thing, you know, if you're using a lot of texting or whatever, the battery goes on you.
Right. Right now, we've got chargers at home. We've got chargers, two or three chargers at home. We've got a charger in the car.
Right.
You know, chargers everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
On my phone, I can take out the battery, so I have an extra battery.
Nice.
With its own charger. So if I really need to switch batteries in the middle of a day, not so much now that I'm retired, but back when I was working, people were calling me all day long, and I was, you know, troubleshooting.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go through a battery in half a day. And I would be able to just switch it out and move on.
Right.
But the one thing I do like
to do with most phones.
With my 5, though, is if it's getting low on battery, I can, with the car charger, plug it in there, and it could be down to 50%. I can, within 15, 20 minutes with that charger, boom, it's back up to the 90%.
Right.
It does a fast charge.
The booster chargers.
Yep. Yep.
And luckily in our town, you can get just about anywhere in about 20, 25 minutes. So
right.
by the time
exactly
you get back
right.
out of the car, you're good to go again.
And I've got the induction charger in the car as well. So when I put it in the little rack in my car,
uh-huh.
it's charging.
Nice.
Immediately. So, but even so, I would still rather have a better battery.
Yes.
Or greater, and now with electric cars capacity. And everything else, we need better batteries.
Yes, and I think smart people are working on it, but we're just not quite there yet in the consumer tech space.
Right. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites.
We were talking about online tools, and let's say you've got a Chromebook and you want to try something new. You're worried that you might have limitations about the things you can do. And these days with web development, boy, it really doesn't seem that way anymore.
You can find a way to do. You can do video editing in a Chromebook. Do it all on the web.
Right.
Yep. You can. And you were talking about Flat.io.
Flat.io. I work at the Eastman School of Music. We do a lot of training of students, as you might imagine. And one of the things that they have to learn about is music theory and notation and things of that nature. So they're often doing these by hand because they're using relatively expensive pieces of software like Finale or Sibelius that are truly professional tools, but maybe kind of overkill for the Theory 101 class. So Flat.io is an online tool that basically builds on what you already know how to do with Google Docs and allows you to have staff notation where you can set your notes and you can collaborate with others. So you want to do a group project or one person's doing one movement, another person's doing another movement, or one person's doing one instrument, or you're trying to compose some kind of collaborative piece. This is something where you can all work together, and right. It's a unique tool, and it has a free entry point that makes it really compelling for a lot of incoming freshmen.
Right. I mean, I've used LilyPond before.
Sure. Similar web-based
similar
tool.
Idea. Right. But again, the ability to, you know, if you don't have, if you've got a Chromebook.
Sure.
You know, what are you going to compose your music on? Well, you can do it there.
Right.
You know, right on your Chromebook.
Things that would have been challenging a few years ago are now becoming far more achievable.
And particularly that ability to collaborate.
That's right. I think that's the secret sauce for that product.
It really is for a lot of products. So, you know, some people do write music by themselves. But if you are part of a group and you're writing and you want multiple people to be part of that collaborative process,
right.
A product like Flat.io is going to do it for you. Same thing with writing. If you're working in a group, whether it's creative writing or business writing or whatever, in a product like Google Docs, you can have multiple people all editing the same document working together.
That's right.
Our student groups use these all the time to do collaborative projects. And
the presentation that I'm giving at this conference coming up, the co-presenter and I are using Google Docs. Technically, we're using Google Slides.
Right.
We're making a presentation. He can be editing slide 15 while I'm working on slides 3 through 5. We don't knock each other over asking for control of the mouse. He works at his house. I work at my house. And we're able to make a lot of progress in a short period of time. And we're also able to share that out to other people and say, hey, what do you think about slide 12? Do we have the speaker notes right? Or do we need to fact check this? And we can handle all of those things without being in the same room. It's really, really helpful for us. And right. In general, being a student today, boy, it sure would make group work a lot easier.
Just think how far that has come to when, you know, used to go to, you'd have to run a place.
Yep.
To do a conference call or a video conference.
Sure.
And it was chop, beat,
and expensive.
Very good. Yeah. Now you can Skype anybody in the world.
I did a conference call off my phone for free.
Yeah.
Call one person, call another person, call a third person, merge them all together. Bang, I'm talking to three other people.
Yeah.
That's right.
Magic. It's magic.
Now we do need to train people on how to be on a conference call.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because that's still painful. You know, just because you can doesn't mean people know how to.
Oh, well,
right,
yeah.
Right.
There's some etiquette issues there that have
well,
to be
trained. Part of it, of course, is that there are all the nonverbal cues
right.
that you don't have when they're not in the same room.
That's right. True. That's why we're all in the same room here in the studio.
Right. Right. We could do this over the air, but it would be difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, this you know, and eventually that'll come. We'll get more used to as people. We'll get more used to doing that stuff offline.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Or rather, out of sight of each other.
That's right.
At multiple locations. But yeah, so something like Flat.io will give Flat.io will give you the ability to make music collaboratively in your browser. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So every time that I roll out new software, I always have some of the professors come down to test it out. And when you're a programmer, one of the things you learn when you learn a new language, the first thing you do in any new language is you write a simple program called Hello World.
Yep.
And the Hello World is simply meant for you to understand, how do I make an instruction that displays a message?
Right.
And just ceremonially, you just choose that particular phrase. So programmers have Hello World. When the new professors come in, the first thing they do is they go into the notation software and they click out the notes and they hit the play button. And I couldn't wait to see what it was, thinking, oh, well, clearly this is going to be some Chopin or some Mozart or right. Bach and stuff. And nope, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, absolutely. That's like, your Hello World.
That works.
And if they now that it's free.
That's right. Now they can get that rolling. Then they say they give us the nod, they give us the thumbs up. Yeah, all right, it's doing this all right. And then they try something a little more complex. But that is their Hello World. So I was very interested.
Very funny, very
happy
funny.
To see that.
There's if you've never looked at what's available online to do stuff, it's kind of amazing. Like I said, I have a friend who edits video online. I have another friend who edits audio online. I mean, these things you used to have a very high-end machine to do. Now,
oh, yeah, sure.
Can you do everything that you do in Photoshop in iMovie or in any of those products?
Movie
Probably
maker.
Not. But how many of those super high-end effects do you actually use?
Right.
Right? So and most of these, by the way, because my friend who does video is cheap, and he'll be the first to admit it, they're free.
That's right.
You know? Well, they're free for a certain length, and then if you want more, you pay.
So is there an online repository? Let's say that you're going to buy a Chromebook, and you want to check out and say, well, I need to do the ability to look at AutoCAD drawings, or I need the ability to do something that's a kind of a specialized thing.
Yes.
Like audio editing. Is there? I know there's that alternative.to site.
Yes.
I don't know if they go specifically into Chrome-specific
It's beginning
tools.
To add that stuff, but the Chrome web store. So, for example, if I were to search for CAD software online,
mm-hmm.
I get viewers, I get Autodesk Force Effect, I get Tinkercad, like that. So, also themes. I don't know what.
All things that are specific to that type of computing application.
Right. They're Chrome apps.
Uh huh.
And 99.999% of these Chrome apps actually just take you to a website.
I see. Okay, so they're letting you know this is the index, the listing of sites that could be helpful if you're trying to perform a particular
right.
task. So if you said notation, music notation, does flat.io come up? And if so,
I don't know.
That's
a very good question. Flat for education.
Okay, second one.
And Flat music scores in Guitar Tabs editor.
Oh, Guitar Tabs too, huh?
Yeah.
Neat.
Okay. So, yeah, it's at flat.io. So one is for education. Again, one is for education.
Right.
And one is for not education.
Right. People that want to do that. I suspect the not education one might cost a bit.
I suspect
amount.
It does, yes.
A nominal amount.
Yes.
Sure.
Well, there's a tab for pricing on it. And it says nothing because it's slow. There it is. if you're a power user, it's $5 a month. $4.90 a month.
Okay. What do you get for that $4.90 a month?
Or
less, if I imagine.
Unlimited public scores, which you get for free.
Okay.
Unlimited private scores, you only get two private scores for free.
Okay.
Real time and offline composition, you only get real time collaboration on the
page.
Free side.
Oh, okay.
But you get offline composition and a bunch of other things, smart
offline
history.
Offline composition, that's interesting.
Like that. So, and awesome support, of course, and you get a power badge.
Okay, and
so apparently you can turn into a lion robot.
Oh, well, that'll be nice.
It's pretty cool. Get five of you together and make
Voltron. Yeah,
very cool.
Okay. You have to get that big sword out.
Exactly.
And it looks like you can also pick your MIDI output there, so you can pipe it back out through
right.
your MIDI
you,
controller.
You can,
make it sound better than
for free, you
canned.
Can compose MIDI.
Sure.
But for...
But it's going to probably use the built-in sound generation that may not be quite as high fidelity as you might be used to.
Right.
If you're
On the other hand, why not go for free?
Try it out.
And when you come up against your limitations, pay the $5 a month.
Then say, aha.
Here, exactly.
Now it's time.
Exactly.
Neat. Well, yeah, it sure is interesting to see the new things that the web is capable of doing, and it's exciting to see the development move in that direction because it really is democratizing who has the capability to do what.
Yep, exactly right. So it's very cool. You just look through the store, and of course you can do this right on your Chrome browser on your desktop. It's the same store.
Don't have to have a Chromebook.
Right. So you can look for all of this stuff and use all of this stuff. People are paying $700 for Office, Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
And you can do everything the average person wants to do for free with Google Docs or Zoho Writer or Apple iCloud or, whatever. But and oh, by the way, Microsoft Online, although the
365 flavor.
Yeah.
Right. Word processing and spreadsheets and note taking, that's all become kind of table stakes these days for computers.
Yeah, exactly right. And the other stuff is doing much the same. All right, listen, that music tells me that you've wasted an entire 2 hours of your life listening to us blather on. I want to thank everybody who called in. I specifically want to thank Dennis Worcester, who came in and did yeoman service for Steve Ray.
Happy to do it.
Always a joy to have you. For Steve Ray, who is one step ahead of law somewhere in the Midwest. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so you don't have to really be too trepidatious. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more Soundbites, the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening. See you in 166 hours.